this Incisal Edge podcast interview. My name's Alan Rees, and I run Dental Business Partners, where I help dentists to build their perfect practices, enabling them and their teams to achieve the rewards their work and dedication deserve. The Incisal Edge is the name for my e-zine, my blog, and this podcast. The object of these interviews is to explore the world of dentistry by talking to people who have gained success, either in dentistry or other fields, or have unique skills that can help dentists and their teams, or are just plain interesting folks involved in dentistry. I spoke to Joanna Taylor a few months ago about her work, her philosophy, and her personal journey from working in financial services in the Channel Islands to helping her clients using NLP, hypnosis, and psychotherapy from her home in North Yorkshire. The techniques she uses and teaches can be of great help to dentists and their teams and their work. It's quite a lengthy interview, but I believe it will repay your time. The Skype connection wasn't great, but please bear with us. Today I'm joined on the Incisal Edge podcast by Joanna Taylor. Joanna's a clinical hypnotherapist, an NLP master practitioner, an INLPTA certified trainer. Perhaps she'll tell us what those letters stand for later on. And she's also a trainee psychotherapist. Welcome to the Incisal Edge podcast, Jo.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me, Alan. It's lovely to be here.
What struck me when we first met was, unlike a lot of people I meet in dentistry who are fairly manic and 100 miles an hour, was the air of calm that you have about you.
Well, that's certainly not always been the case. If you've known me historically, this has something to do with the training that I've done over the years, that now I'm in a much calmer place than I used to be, certainly.
Okay, well, tell me something about that. Tell me about your background.
Well, historically, I was a PA. I've always been in the secretarial line of things. And before we moved to North Yorkshire, we were in Guernsey, and I was a PA in the finance industry there. Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty stressful place to work, really. Particularly, as you can imagine, over the period where we were in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I saw a lot of stressed people, and I had a very stressed boss. And I was also a bit of a stress bunny myself. So when we moved over to North Yorkshire, I didn't quite know what to do with myself because there's no finance industry in the North York Moors. And, there's not really anybody to be a PA to. There's just lots of sheep. And it was a case of, I really want to do something completely different. What can I do? And I came across a lady who was a life coach, and I was quite fascinated. I'd never even heard of it before. And talking to her, I thought, perhaps this is something that I might like to look into. And so I did a qualification in life coaching and thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was all about this stuff called NLP. Again, I'd never heard of it. I don't think they'd come across it in the Channel Islands. And so I learned a lot about NLP and decided that this was definitely something that I wanted to do more of. And alongside the NLP came hypnosis, because the two quite naturally link to one another, working as they do with the unconscious part of our mind. And so I did qualifications in NLP and hypnosis, and then did more qualifications in NLP and hypnosis, because the more I learned, the more fascinated I became by it. And gradually, the training has gone on and on until now. I'm in the process of training to be a neurolinguistic psychotherapist, which is being a very, very fascinating and unbelievable journey, really. But many changes have happened in that time.
Great. Well, yes, I mean, I know it's a very hackneyed word to use these days in view of, as one hears it coming out of your TV screen often enough, is about the journey you've been on. But I think it's reasonable to say that that does sound like one. You've left one area of competence in behind you, and obviously
you've left one geographically, in it, having left Guernsey and gone to North Yorkshire. You're originally from Yorkshire, though, as I remember. Is that right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes, both John and myself, but they're originally from Leeds. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back. You started with NLP. Now, NLP, for those people who are not familiar with the acronym, stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Is that correct?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Tell me some more about NLP.
NLP is no one thing, really. It's a collection of techniques and kind of methodologies, and it's a whole philosophy in itself, round about how we think and how we process the world. It's based on a constructivist approach, which means that the philosophy behind it is that we create our own realities. We each create what goes on in our minds based on our own individual values and beliefs and memories. So we all perceive the world in our own way. And where the linguistic bit comes into that is that we effectively, we talk to ourselves inside our heads. We talk to each other. We use language to express the way we're feeling. We use language to express our problems and what we want to have out of life. And how we use that language, how we language our problems inside our mind, creates particular perceptions about the way the world is for us. And the techniques of NLP can help us to deconstruct things that we've made up inside our heads that are not useful for us. So sometimes people can have a very unuseful way of perceiving themselves. They might have a very negative belief about themselves. For example, they might think they're stupid or they're not good enough to do whatever it is. And that's a very limiting thing to believe about yourself. And we tend to, as human beings, we look for evidence to support our beliefs, whatever our beliefs are. And of course, we find it. So if we have an unuseful belief about ourselves, something that's very limiting, we'll look for evidence to support that, and we will find it.
Yes, that sounds familiar. Yep.
Exactly. I mean, it's great when our beliefs about ourselves are supportive and useful and helpful to us, then that's great. When we believe that we're good at what we do, then that means that we see the evidence to support that. But if we believe that we're not good enough to be something or to do something, then every little thing that goes wrong, we'll just chalk that up to, oh, yes, absolutely, I've proved it to myself once again. NLP can help with that. It's just a belief. The belief is not necessarily true. It's just an idea that we've ceased to question. And if something isn't working for us in life, if we have a belief that's getting in the way, it's perfectly possible for us to deprogram something that's been programmed into us. And NLP can help us to do that.
Okay. Thank you. That's great. That's great, great help for me and hopefully to everybody who's listening. Nicely put together. Thank you, Joe. So, is there a relationship between hypnosis and NLP?
There is. There's a very natural relationship between the two, because NLP works with things that are in our unconscious mind. So our values and beliefs are, for the most part, they're unconscious. We don't tend to think about them in our general, everyday, conscious life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it lives there in the background.
Yeah.
So with NLP, we're wanting to achieve unconscious change. And hypnosis, of course, works very much with our unconscious mind as well. So the two are very natural partners. So using the two together means that you can really help somebody create that unconscious level of change that they're wanting to achieve.
Got you. Now, I've seen from your website you do courses in self-hypnosis. Now, yes. Now, traditionally, the idea of hypnotism is, of course, with the man with the watch chain and so on. No, I know enough to know that's not quite how it always works. But so, tell me some more about self-hypnosis.
Well, self-hypnosis is a really valuable technique, and really, when you think about any hypnosis, actually, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, because what we're doing inside our own heads is all ours. So when you're working with a hypnotherapist, the hypnotherapist is just effectively a tour guide, and what you're doing is in your own head. And teaching people to be able to use this as a life skill is actually it's actually a really useful skill to have. We can use it for all sorts of things. People use it for help with stress and anxiety. It's massively useful for that. And people use it for help with pain control, or to help them achieve goals in life, to help them have greater sense of clarity about problems, or greater creativity. Whatever it is you're wanting to achieve, self-hypnosis can help you access that bit of your unconscious mind that contains your potential, if you like, so that it puts you in touch with a huge untapped resource that you have within you, which can help you achieve things.
How easy is it or not to learn?
It's incredibly easy. There's lots of different techniques, and it's about finding or creating the technique that works for you. So some people like just a form of progressive relaxation. Some people like visualizing things. For example, you might have a special place where you like to go. People like maybe a beach at your favorite time of day, or perhaps a meadow. Somewhere in nature often. Sometimes it's just a comfortable room where you can imagine cuddling up on a sofa with a furry rug or whatever. It's entirely individual. And this is why a lot of people will buy a CD or download something that's a guided meditation. Uh-huh. And this is quite similar. Meditation and self-hypnosis are pretty similar. They take you to the same place.
Yes.
Sometimes the guided ones might not work so well, because you'll be listening to something and it will give some suggestion as to what's going on in the scene around you, and you think, oh, that's not right. I don't like that. That's not my imagination. So being able to create this for yourself means that you're completely in control. You are the guide and the operator and the subject when you use self-hypnosis. So finding the method that works for you is the key thing. So being able to offer a good selection of choices and have the client practice means that they can find something that they're actually going to use and have fun with and enjoy.
Okay, thank you. That's clarified a few things for me. Okay, and presumably this is something you can be taught, and it's something that you teach.
Absolutely. And I also teach people how to teach it, because, I mean, particularly in for example, in the dental practice, it's a hugely useful tool. If you have anxious patients, it's a very useful thing for the patients to be able to go and use for themselves, so that they can reduce their anxiety. It makes everybody's life an awful lot easier in the practice. So it's very useful for self. It's very useful for client, and it's very useful to teach to client.
Okay, let's go stay on the subject of dentistry. Most of my listeners are dental or related to dentistry because of the niche in which I work. But you have a link on your website, and we'll talk about your website in a little while. Conversational hypnosis in the dental practice. Tell me some more.
Well, we can use language to induce trance. This idea comes from one of the founders of of modern hypnosis. This is Milton Erickson, who practiced in the last century. And he built up his practice on the idea that we can just use language to induce trance in another person, just by the way we speak, by using what he described as artfully vague language. That means that when we use language in a very vague way and not specific, we have to sort of do a little bit of the work in our own heads to work out what the other person means by that. And as we do that, it takes us into trance. But the more vague we are, the more in trance we get when we think and reflect and go inside about what it is that might mean. So we can use it just conversationally to help somebody to relax. As you sit in the dental chair, just noticing the sounds around you and the sound of my voice, how easy might it be for you to be able to just pay attention to the feeling in your hands that rests on the arm of the chair and notice how that feeling of comfort can just spread? That sort of language, it's an odd way of speaking, but it can just start to induce relaxation in somebody who's been very tense. And you obviously tailor it to what's going on around you in the surgery and around the person. Have them pay attention to things that they might not otherwise notice.
That's great. And certainly in my clinical career, I've noticed that I did a certain amount of hypnosis training. I applied it, I thought, but then I discovered myself doing things that I hadn't been taught that also worked. I firmly believe it has a place, and it's something that ought to be taught to all dental students.
It's something that a lot of people will just use automatically. It's useful to sometimes know what it is that you're doing that works, so that it can then be replicated when you want to know what it was that you did that worked.
Mm.
And hypnotic language patterns are just something you can slip into the conversation to just help when people are feeling stressed. And it's something that the patient takes on board very unconsciously. They don't realise it, but before they know where they are, they suddenly find they're having much more pleasant experience than they actually expected.
Now, stress, of course, in dentistry is not limited to our patients. Unfortunately, it also affects dentists and everybody else who works within a practice. If it is allowed to, and sadly, I was reading only this morning about a recent suicide of a dentist, which is something that seems to be occurring far too often. You did a survey, I believe, a couple of years ago on stress in dentistry, which I believe really ought to have had far more publicity than it actually got. Can you share that with us?
Well, it was an extraordinary thing, really, and I wanted to look at what the causes of stress were in the dental practice, and I wanted to know quite how bad it was, really. One reads a lot about stress in dentistry, and it is obviously a subject that's close to my heart. And so I planned this little survey thinking I would get 40 or 50 responses to it. And we asked permission to put it on the GDP UK website, which we kindly did. And overnight, I had nearly 300 responses. So it clearly hit a nerve in many respects. And the responses I got were quite phenomenal. And because we made it completely anonymous, people did feel able to share quite a lot of heartbreaking stories. And from the associate who was being bullied and left out of things, and a practice principal who had attempted suicide, and all sorts of stories that came out as a result of this. And we've got, because of the volume of responses we've got, we actually got some very interesting results. And one of the things I wanted to know was what was the cause of stress. And I was expecting to have a response that the stress was caused by problems external to the dental practice. So this was a point at which we were having the CQCs,
yes.
HTML5. I was expecting it to be, oh, it's all to do with all the with the extra admin, the compliance. And the really interesting thing was that it wasn't that at all. The things that caused the majority of stress in the practice, two things. One was running late, and the second was staff conflict within the practice.
Really?
And I was astonished, because of course these are two things that the practices can absolutely do something about. And so why not create some positive change within the practice to enable this stress to reduce? And so this was one of the purposes for conducting that study.
Yeah, I've got the results here in front of me, and nearly half of dentists listed, 48% listed running late as being their main cause of stress. Now, I find this an astonishing thing, because I do come across this in my everyday consulting life, is that dentists let the book run them rather than the other way around. Yeah, they say they find it a stressor, and yet they carry on doing the same things over and over again. And yet it is a straightforward thing to manage your book.
And it, you know, it does sound trite to say that if what you're doing isn't working, then do something different. But the fact remains that people tend to stay in their little comfort zone, regardless of whether or not that's actually working for them. And I find that really sad, that often people don't realise that there is perhaps a different way of doing that just relieves so much stress from their life.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Sullivan said that people won't make a change until the pain of making the change is less than the pain of not making the change. And that, sadly, it seems to me that sometimes it has to be something for something traumatic to happen before they will make the change. So how does stress manifest itself?
Stress manifests itself in lots and lots of different ways. It can manifest in anger. So if you think about what's physiologically going on in your body, the stress response is the fight or flight response.
Yeah.
So the fight part of that can come out as aggression, animosity, anger. The flight response can be social withdrawal, turning to things like alcohol or video games, or watching television, just completely withdrawing from the things that are going on around you. And often it can result in physical symptoms as well. So an awful lot of health symptoms that we experience nowadays are actually related to chronic stress. And it's the small stressors, it's the little everyday stressors that happen all the time that cause us the most health-related problems than actually the great big stresses, which you think would affect us more, but actually the big things that happen in life tend to have a beginning and a middle and an end point.
Yes.
Things like moving house, buying a new practice, taking on a new associate. These are things that once you've got all the donkey work out of the way and then you can get on with life again, they have an end point. Whereas things that happen every day, little bits of stuff, conflict, or running late, or whatever it is that's going on, those small niggles, they just cause chronic stress. So we have this fight or flight response, our stress hormones running around our system at a low grade all the time, which is really not good for us. It's very tiring to our system to have permanent state of fight or flight, and results in reduced immune system responses, and so we start to get colds and things. It can also create things like irritable bowel syndrome, all sorts of other stress-related problems. You see this in patients who suffer with jaw clenching and TMJ problems, bruxism. These are all things that are caused by or can be caused by chronic stress.
Yeah. Yes, and certainly in my experience, practicing during the last recession was that I never had to treat so many people for clenching and grinding and so on, who had TMJ and muscle symptoms. It ironically enough, when the economy improved, I thought I'd just... I wasn't seeing the patients anymore, but I think...
Yes. Often you see within the dental practice, obviously these things can be the symptoms can be treated with splints and so on, but it doesn't get rid of the cause. So helping people with the cause of the underlying symptom is part of what I do, by being able to offer some different techniques to be able to help with stress so that it doesn't create that symptom in the first place.
Tell me some more what you can do to help dentists and their teams, to help themselves and to help their patients.
Well, the work I do fits quite nicely within dentistry. A lot of the work I do is with phobic patients, so helping them with phobias, dental phobia, needle phobia, stresses, anxieties. That sort of thing can be, well, I say easily, but it's frequently dealt with on a one-to-one basis. Phobias can be quite complex, so sometimes they're quick and easy to treat, but sometimes it's connected to something a bit more underlying, so we have to spend a bit more time and have some sessions with that. So on a one-to-one basis, within the dental sphere, the sort of work I do is very useful. The other hat that I wear is on the training side of life. So I offer training to individuals within the dental world, but also to practices as a whole for stress management, for self-hypnosis, to learn it and to teach it. Communication skills to help with that all-important staff conflict and helping to get rid of that. So that if you create this way of being within the practice, that all the staff communicate well with one another and can help to communicate well with the patients and understand the patients. Understanding that people do think differently from one another is actually a key point, and we tend to think that everybody processes things in the same way as ourselves, and actually that's not the case. And assisting a team understand that and understand how each member of the team is processing things differently from one another, how they do that, means that you can really understand one another and communicate much better, which of course creates a much more relaxed environment, but also a much more efficient one.
Mm-hmm.
Stress management, teaching that within a practice, again, has very big implications for how the practice feels as a whole, how they are in themselves, a different way of being, and tools for the life, which mean that they can take that not just within their working life, but also out into other areas as well. If you create change, of course, in one area of your life, it can't help but impact on the rest of your life. And if that change is a positive one, then that has a whole ripple of positive change, not just for you, but for everybody around you as well. So the change that you can get by creating a group of people who are all very good at being relaxed and having a very high stress threshold means that exponentially everybody around them at work and at home also benefits from that. So stress management is useful in that respect. Hypnosis, teaching a practice how to use hypnosis within their working day also has benefits for themselves as well as the obviously fit for their patients. Again, helps reduce the amount of stress in the practice, because when your patients are relaxed, then that tends to help create a relaxed atmosphere for all concerned. Yeah. So a whole variety of ways in which this can be useful within the practice.
That's great. Thank you. I do wish I'd known about a lot of this 25 years ago. As I said earlier, I do wish it was taught routinely to dentists and their teams, because I think it benefits them and benefits their patients, and therefore leads to more successful practices.
I was just going to say, Alan, you're absolutely right, and it is all about creating balance. And everything I do is about helping people create that sense of balance within their life that means that they have the time to do everything that they want to do in the way that they want to do it.
Mm. Ah, sounds ideal. Sounds great. Joe, I understand we're coming to the end of our call, but you mentioned earlier you're training as a psychotherapist or a neurolinguistic psychotherapist at the moment.
That's right. Yeah.
How long is that training?
Well, the training altogether is 4 years. 2 years of that is taken up with the practitioner training, the master practitioner training, which as people start on the NLP route, those are the standard qualifications that you would take. But then after that, we have another 2 years of the actual psychotherapy bit, and this is neuro-linguistic psychotherapy. Uh-huh. So it's using all the theories and the presuppositions of NLP within a psychotherapeutic context, which makes it a very, it's a constructivist approach. It's a very outcome-focused approach rather than problem-related, which some other therapies are. And so I have another 2 years of this. I'm now 3 years through, just taken my exams last week. So I've got another year where I've got all sorts of things to write and another research project to do, which I'd like to just touch on if I may.
Yes, please.
Because it's going to be in the dental field.
Oh, great.
And then after that, I'll go for accreditation once I've got my diploma, so we're looking at 2015 before I'm actually accredited, fingers crossed. Uh-huh. But as part of this qualification, I have to undertake a research project. And leading on from the stress survey that I did back in 2011, I want to investigate this a little bit further. And this is going to be aimed purely at dentists. The last one was for the whole team, but this time it's just for the dentists. And I'm interested in making some change within the way that the dentistry is at the moment, and how we have this ethos of stress. And as we mentioned earlier on, Alan, tragically, in many cases, or in some cases, attempted suicide and actual suicide. There's a lot of burnout in the world of dentistry, and this has become a very much a buzzword at the moment. And I know it's not just in dentistry, but dentistry obviously is a profession that is dear to my heart. And so what would happen if we investigated the dentistry that is today? How much burnout is there? What's the mental health status in the world of dentistry at the moment? There will be people who are in a not good place, and there will be people who are in a much better place. Those people who are in a much better place, what are they doing? What's the difference that's making the difference there? How are they coping differently from the people who are doing not so well? What can we learn from these people who are doing okay and who are managing and who are happy in what they're doing? So this is part of what I'm wanting to research. So shortly, I will be putting out this new survey, which again will be anonymous, so that people can take part freely and share things freely without the fear of repercussion. And I would really appreciate it if people could possibly take part in this. It's a little bit of a longer survey than the last one. I sent it to you, Alan, so you've seen what it's like.
And yes.
And it's based on a standard health questionnaire, uh-huh. So mental health questionnaire,
yeah.
Which I've been given permission to use. So it's going to be, I hope, will be a valuable piece of research and might just help us with a little bit of insight into what's going on and perhaps lead towards making some positive change in the world of dentistry in the future. And that's my hope.
That's fantastic, Jo. I do wish you very well. I read the survey with interest, or the questionnaire with interest. And I look forward to helping you disseminate that to as many contacts as I've got, so that the results you get will, you know, be credible, and certainly coming on as it does on the back of the earlier survey you did, which really did open my eyes. I always thought it was just me when I was a single-handed practitioner, as you do tend to, and I realise, obviously, now in the work that I do, that it certainly wasn't. But yeah, I think you deserve great success for what you're doing, and I look forward to helping you and look forward to reading the results. How do we get in touch with you? Anybody who's interested in what you do, how do they contact you? How do they find out more about you?
Well, certainly, as you were kind enough to mention my website, that's certainly a good point of call, which is joanna-taylor.co.uk. There you can also contact me by searching for me on the internet or by looking for, I'm on Twitter, Seeds_Happiness. Or you can look me on Facebook as well. Uh-huh. A variety of different combinations.
As is the way. Just so basically, put Joanna-Taylor into Google rather than anything else. Oh, sorry,
there are some actresses with the same name as me, so you have to do a little bit of hunting if you're just searching for my name.
Yes,
but the company name is Joanna-Taylor and Associates.
Right.
You can search for me with that or visit my website at www.joanna-taylor.co.uk.
And you run courses in Yorkshire and in Guernsey, because you still have a foot in both camps, I realise.
So I run courses for individuals to come along to, as you say, in Yorkshire, here in North Yorkshire and in Guernsey. And also I do in-house trainings for anybody who wants me to travel to them, basically. So happy to help. And the most important thing, I think, to know about everything that I do is that if you are in a place where life isn't working so well for you, just to know that there are other ways of being and that it is possible to change the way that you're being now into something that will work better for you in the future.
Jo, that's a wonderful way to finish our call. Thank you very much for spending the time to talk to me today, and I hope that's been great help to our listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Alan.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Incisal Edge podcast with my guest today, Joanna Taylor. To find out more about Jo and her work, go to her website, www.joanna-taylor.co.uk. For more information about me, Dr. Alan Rees, my work as a dental business consultant and coach, and how I help dentists to build their perfect practices, visit the website www.dentalbusinesspartners.co.uk or go to www.theincisaledge.co.uk. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Incisal Edge podcast by visiting iTunes. Thank you for listening.